is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Europe after Afghanistan. Lessons learned. I go immediately to Judy Dempsey, non-resident senior fellow, Carnegie Europe, editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. And a recent article that Judy published takes me to 1998, 23 years ago, with a very young-looking Tony Blair, equally young-looking Jacques Chirac, meeting in St. Malo, one of those Tony European meetings, discussing a European force of some 60,000 for crises in the future. I believe they were thinking about the Balkans, but who knows? It was the 20th century. Judy, a very good evening to you. 23 years, just like a moment. What have we learned about Europe's ambitions and long conversation about a European force to augment other peacekeeping around the world? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thank you very much for having me on your wonderful show. In fact, we have what we have learned is that we can't do things actually together. And we can't do things together because we disagree. The 27 member states disagree. As you know, Britain has left. And we have different perceptions of threats. This is the first thing. And secondly, there's this residual feeling that if Europe did establish a kind of defense, real serious defense policy, it would be in competition to NATO. And the final thing is, of course, a lot of countries don't trust France because they think it's France that wants to throw its defense weight around Europe, which indeed it may have to given what's happening in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan, right, too, the lessons learned. The tragedies are ongoing. We know this. We also know that Europe was a partner, but what you'd have to say is a partner without the infrastructure to sustain a position to defend the Kabul government after the U.S. made the decision to withdraw. Is that a lesson that in Berlin and Paris and London are paying attention to now, having joined in the partnership that didn't have any meaning if the U.S. is not on board?
I wonder, have they internalized this catastrophe? We have two problems. One is that the so-called caucus, the European caucus inside NATO, doesn't speak out. And as you know, NATO is dominated by the United States. It pays the most. It sets the agenda. But, you know, NATO went in there together and they vowed that they would leave together, but the consultations broke down. But frankly, if the Europeans had a problem with Afghanistan from the beginning, they should have said so. This is the first thing. And secondly, the EU itself went in there with soft power. And it wasn't coordinated. And what you had was two completely different, diametrically opposed missions. One was a mission to combat terrorism, and the other was a mission to do some state or nation building. And they never coalesced, they never synchronized, they never complemented each other. So when President Biden decided, to pull out, it was really a unilateral decision without very little consultation. And the Europeans, in some ways through their own fault because they never spoke up, but they were left high and dry. And the lesson is they are not going to do this again.
A puzzle, Judy, for me. I've been speaking with London often over these last weeks, and the voices are muted but adamant that this is heartbreaking for London to see the U.S. moving without consultation, without agreement in some fashion. Actually, the voices were not so muted in the parliamentary debate. There are some veterans of Afghanistan who were, is the word enraged too strong? I don't think so. Is there damage done between the U.S. and Europe, between the U.S. and NATO these weeks?
You see, John, if there's damage done, what does this damage amount to? And NATO really got its fingers burnt during the Iraq War when the United States went into Iraq under really extraordinarily dishonest circumstances. And that nearly destroyed NATO. But NATO pulled itself together. But how many times can NATO pull itself together now? The damage is big. But somehow there's a feeling that, well, we'll manage this. The Europeans will manage this. Why? Because there isn't an alternative at the moment. And the Americans still are the security guarantor for the Europeans. But I'm not so sure how long any administration, whether it's a Biden administration or before or after, is going to continue with this. And essentially the Americans are saying, Europeans, you have to get your act together as well. But I'm just not convinced that the Europeans are going to do this. I think the lessons learned, they would become more inward-looking.
We'll stay with Afghanistan in a moment, because I'm looking at Ukraine and the Baltics. But Afghanistan, there is now imminently a refugee crisis, similar to the refugee crisis we've watched over the years because of the Syrian darkness. All right. That refugee crisis is not going to fall equally on the U.S. and Europe. It's headed your way through Turkey. You know this. There's said to be some 300,000, maybe 500,000 Afghans already in Turkey looking to get into the EU. Is that a pressing issue for Europe? I'm looking for a driver for Europe to speak up to the United States. You got us into this. You got to help us.
I don't think the United States is going to come into this area, and the Europeans don't want to be involved in this either. And this is why I think the Europeans are doing a big push to restart humanitarian assistance and support for the Afghan people. What the Europeans don't want, and we have the German elections coming up, we have the French elections coming up, we just had the Norwegian elections, what they don't want are more refugees, which actually do need security and safety. And Iraq and Pakistan now will have to look after them, or else the refugees will go to Turkey, and the Europeans will try to buy their way out of this, which is going to be incredibly difficult. But this is an issue that the Europeans have all said, well, we'll try to keep the refugees near their country. But how can you? It's all very well keeping them near your country, but Pakistan and Iraq and other countries and Iran need an infrastructure to look after these people.
There are elections underway, so I don't ask for one leader. I understand that the situation is changing quickly, and we'll speak of Germany in just a moment. But it occurs to me, to draw on the Syrian model, this is maybe a step beyond your essay, but it's analogous. 1 million is the estimate of refugees from the Syrian conflict that flowed into Europe, but Germany in particular. However, they spread out across the map. I see that there are refugees arriving in England now, crossing the channel in lifeboats. It's quite amazing, still going on, given that we've got another one coming. The Europeans, do they move with one voice when it comes to soft power, which is dealing with refugees, the refugees from Syria? Is there a model there they can build on, Judy?
There are two models. One was the German model when Angela Merkel opened up the borders and took in 1 million refugees from humanitarian reasons and for legal reasons. But, John, there's still no agreement among the 27 member states of a migration policy, an asylum policy and a refugee policy. And the Central Europeans and other countries don't want to take in any migrants or refugees, first of all. But secondly, they're closing the borders more and more. And we see this between Poland and Belarus and Lithuania and Belarus. The refugee issue is politically so, I suppose, poisonous for some leaders. Instead of having a discussion about decency and humanity and the fact that these people need security, it's regarded as, well, you know, try to keep it away from us. So essentially, to cut a very long story short, the European Union and the European member states will do what they can to keep the problem outside their borders.
All right, but we plunge into Europe's self-interest. Paris, for example, is involved in sub-Saharan Africa now. We know this. There's been headlines recently about successes, if you call the death of a terror leader a success. But in any event, Europe has a motive, it occurs to me, to integrate all of these efforts that individual states are taking on. The Italians are involved with the human trafficking coming from North Africa. Do they speak collectively, Judy? I can understand the languages in Brussels, but I do see the self-interest from the American point of view. It's not get your act together. It's right now you're involved individually and you'd be stronger together.
I don't see it like this when it comes to the refugee issue. We have two issues: migration, and people migrate because of the degradation of the climate, for economic opportunity, to escape corruption, to have a better life. That's migration. The refugee issue is a legal issue, which all the member states of the European Union have signed up to. You have to give refugees security and safety and protection. And we are mixing the two up now, and it's clear that those fleeing Afghanistan are refugees. But there isn't a common view inside the EU on how to deal with this. The common view is that we try to keep these impoverished people on the borders near Afghanistan. And secondly, we will try to pump in humanitarian aid, and we'll try to do another deal with Turkey. But, you know, it's all, you know, pour money outside the EU. Don't allow these refugees to come in, which is quite, it's very sad, actually, given that we were heavily involved there for 20 years.
I'm speaking with Judy Dempsey, the non-resident senior fellow of the Carnegie Europe, editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. We're going to turn to the German elections, which are imminent. And all of this flows to the conversation we're now having about Afghanistan, but more particularly about the future of Europe. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.